Okay. So we're in Shmuel Bet Perek Gimel. And this Perek, as well as the one after it, Perek Daled, prepare the way for David's undisputed rule over all of Israel. Remember, until Perek He, he's sharing the rule of Israel with Ish-Boshes, Shaul's son, okay, who was appointed by Avner. Avner is the real power, as we're about to see in this chapter. Okay, and Perek Gimel starts off, Atihi ha-milchama aruka bein beit Shaul uvein beit David. And that's it's like a preview of the conflict between the two kingdoms. That conflict came out very significantly in the last chapter with that battle we spoke about the last time. And it says at the end of the pasuk, "V'David holeich v'chazek u'beit Shaul holchim v'dalim." David is getting stronger and stronger, and Shaul's household, Shaul's followers, Shaul's. I mean, although it's incredible because to frame it this way, because Shaul rules over 11 tribes, and David is only ruling over one tribe. Okay. All right, so this first pasuk was also a little foreshadowing of the next few chapters of how we're paving the way for David's undisputed rule over all the tribes. It did not happen all at once. It happened gradually over a period of 7 years. Now, the next pasuk is also somewhat foreshadowing for the rest of Shmuel Bet about David's children. Vayevoldu leDavid banim bechevron. David's first kingdom was not in Yerushalayim. It was in Hebron. I mentioned last time also the opinion of the Malbim that Hebron is in the heart of Yehuda, while Yerushalayim is all the way at the north. Yerushalayim is just at the border of Yehuda. Usually a king puts his capital in the middle of the country. Or in this case, David should put his kingdom in the middle of Yehuda. Instead, he chooses to move his kingdom to Yerushalayim, Kabbalistically and Midrashically, because it was always known to be a special city, although at this point in Shmuel Bet, it's not even a Jewish city yet. It's not conquered until chapter 5, right? But the question is, what makes David all of a sudden say, hey, I think I'll conquer a city a little north of my capital? Right? The political reason why it makes sense for David to move his kingdom to Yerushalayim is because it straddles the border between Yehuda and Binyamin. He wants to make peace with Binyamin. He does not want to be at odds with the kingdoms. He has to consolidate his rule, and it's a sort of a little like reconstruction after a civil war. You want to reach out. Abraham Lincoln took a vice president from the South as a result because of this, right? And Tennessee was sort of, you know, the one state that held on longest, and one, you know, he figured, let me have a bridge to the South through a senator from Tennessee. So this is what David is trying to do. He wants to bridge the gap between Binyamin and Yehuda by bringing up his kingdom to Yerushalayim. It's also a very strategically powerful city, because it's really surrounded by mountains, Harim Savivla, except from the north, and that's why Yirmiyahu says, Kimi Tzafon Tipatach Hara'ah. All the bad stuff comes in from the north. Okay? All right, so it says that David had children in Hebron, the seat of his first kingdom, and it says, Vayhi b'choro Amnon la'achinoam ha'Yisraelis. Achinoam was not his first wife, because his first wife was Michal, but I think we discussed this last time also, is that Achinoam was the name of Shaul's wife. Right, especially Achinoam ha-Yisraelis. So it stands to reason, and this is the opinion of Rabbi Huda in the Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, that when Shaul died, David married the princesses, or the widows, or whatever you want to call it. Okay, at least in this one case he did. Now, the opinion of the Chachamim is that when a king dies, no one may marry his wives. I believe that's the rule in Great Britain and some other places. Right? A woman who's married to the king doesn't marry anybody else afterwards. Right? Remember when Adoniyahu asked for Avishag HaShunamit's hand in marriage? And she wasn't even married to David, right? She was just there. Remember the Haftorah? You know, it's this week's Haftorah. Okay? It's the Haftorah of Chayesara. Okay, take a look. So that woman, Avishag HaShunamis, was not really David's wife. She was some kind of consort, but not David's wife, right? And yet, when Adoniyahu asked for her hand in marriage, Shlomo used that as an excuse, if you will, to have him killed. He thought that wanting to marry Avishag was wanting to take over the kingdom. Okay, like I think when Haman falls on the bed with Esther, Ahasuerus says Hakoveshes Hamalko imi babayis. He really means Hakoveshes Hamalchus, as we know from Macbeth and we know from Hamlet, right? So when David marries Achinoam he Israelis after Shaul dies, that's a sign that, you know, hey, I'm the new king around here, and I get to marry the queens from the old king, right? Now, I just mentioned this as the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that one king may marry the wives of the other king. Of course, only if the previous king was not his father, of course, then he can't marry his father's wives. But David, of course, was not Shaul's son, right? But here I'll just tell you the basis of the dispute between Rabbi Yehuda, who says one king can marry the wives of the previous king, and the other one says no, is that Rabbi Yehuda says that when David sinned with Bathsheba, the prophet Nosson rebuked him and said, why did you have to take a woman that was not yours? Didn't I give you Shaul's kingdom and his women? I gave you the kingdom Uneshei Shaul and Shaul's women. So doesn't that sound like David married the princesses, the queens, the David married the women of Shaul? So can you give a teretz for the Chachamim?
Yeah, why?
Remember the Gemara's teretz? Right? What did the prophet mean when he said, and I gave you permission to marry the previous king's women? Who was he referring to? Not Shaul's wives, but Shaul's
daughters.
Yes, daughters. His daughters. He only married one of them, but okay. All right, but that's the dispute. Anyway, that's the first wife, Achinoam Yisraelis. Notice that he doesn't seem to have children with Michal. Michal was his first wife. We'll get to that in chapter 6. Umishnehu kilav la'avigayil eshes novel akarmeli. Oh my goodness, is she still called the wife of Novel? That's back in Shmuel Aleph in chapter 25. David seems to collect the wives of other men. Achinoam, the wife of Shaul, right? Avigail, the wife of Nabal. See more of that too in this book. Again, there's a lot of foreshadowing going on. Chazal like this guy, Kilav. He's one of the four people who never sinned. He was Shlomo's Rebbe in Torah. Why do Chazal like this guy so much? He's never mentioned again in the whole book. I'm sorry?
Doesn't aspire to be king.
Right, that's why Chazal like him so much, because he's never mentioned again. He doesn't aspire to be king or to forcefully take it like his brothers. Right, Amnon loses it because he's a despicable person. Right, and when Avshalom kills him, nobody sheds a tear, but David, and Avshalom is killed for his revolt. Adoniyahu revolts. That's this week's Haftorah. Right, the connection to the Haftorah is that when David's very old, it says he was zaken bo bayamim, a very rare terminology in the Tanakh that is used for Avraham and Sarah as well. And just a trivia question is only the term appears only regarding one other person in the whole Tanakh. David, Avram and Sarah, and who's that other person? Who is called Ba Bayamim? He took his days with him. The answer to that is Yahushua. Yahushua at the age of 110 was still active and getting the job done. So, okay. All right, so that's the third one. The second one is Kilav. The third one is Avshalom ben Ma'acha bas Talmai Melech Geshur. Oh my goodness, there's no conventional wives here. Talmai, this is a Yafas Toar. Okay, this third woman, Ma'acha, was not born Jewish. She was the daughter of the king of Geshur. Right, Chazal say that she was a Yafas Toar, that the law in the beginning of Parshas Kisetze, that he found, and he does fight a battle against Geshur in Shmuel Aleph. Haravi Adoniyahu ben Chagis, bad guy in this week's Haftarah. Four, Hachamishi Shfatya ben Avital, nothing is said about him. Vahashishi Yisra'am Le'egla Eishes David. Because I'll say that this Egla is actually Michal. Aye, it says she didn't have a baby till the day she died. Yeah, the day she died. She died in childbirth. Right? So, Ela Yul Du LeDavid B'Chevron. These are the children born to David and Chevron. And it also foreshadows some of the stories that will be told later on. And as is often true, this is based on an observation of a voluminous work, encyclopedic work actually, by Winston Churchill, chronicling the kings of England. I think I made reference to this point a few times, is that this book was chronicles all the kings and his siblings. There has never been a king of England that was an only child. Every king of England has had siblings. And this book, it shows that each king of England, by Winston Churchill's estimation and his description, he himself being the youngest child, says that every king of England had an older sibling that he feels and proves would have made a better king. Got that? Okay, why is this a trend? For the same reason that Hevel bests Cain, why, you know, Avram is a younger sibling, Shem is a younger sibling, Yitzchak is a younger sibling, Yaakov is a younger sibling, right? Yehuda is, Peretz is, Ephraim is, Moshe is, David is, Shlomo is. Okay, there are all these younger siblings, right? Especially the line leading to David the Mashiach, right? It's like a progression. Yaakov has to overcome one older sibling. Yehuda has to overcome three older siblings. Peretz has to overcome four older siblings. Zerach, Shelah, Er, and Onan. And David has to overcome seven older siblings. It's like, as you go down to Mashiach, as you go down to the one who establishes the kingdom, there are more and more older siblings that he has to, I would say overcome, but, you know, has to, no older sibling takes this lightly. And it's the only one that does, it seems to be a Menashe, who only Yosef seems to object Menashe being swept aside for Ephraim. And then, of course, that sets the stage for Aaron being happy for Moshe, his younger brother.
Wasn't Avraham the oldest son?
According to a Gemara in the 8th Perek in Maseches Sanhedrin, Avraham was not. Nachor was the oldest child, even though he's mentioned first in the Pasuk. The Gemara in the 8th Perek in Sanhedrin, the Perek Ben Saramora, brings proofs of this, as well as that Shem, even though he's mentioned first also, was younger. Okay, that is manifest in the Pesukim itself. Okay, So the Yibioto Milchama Bench Beit Shaul Ben Beit David, the Avner Hayamit Chazek Beit Shaul. So the Pasuk Vav indicates what we already knew, that the power of the house of Shaul was in the hands of Avner. And this is foreshadowing our story here. Because in Perek Gimel, the king of the other tribes, Ishbosheth, is going to accuse Avner of sleeping with a former wife of Shaul. It's okay for David to do that, he's king. But if Avner is sleeping with a former wife of Shaul, and she's named Ritzpah Bas Aya, okay, Ritzpah Bas Aya, the question is, was it true or not? The reader of the Bible can never know. There's no indication in the text of the Bible whether this is true or not. But one has to imagine that it is true. It is true. Ishbosheth isn't going to just blindly accuse him of a rumor. It is true. And Avner couldn't care less if it's true. As far as Avner is concerned, he could have crowned himself king for all that matters. But he was loyal to Shaul, so he crowned Ishbosheth king. But Avner does not take kindly to the accusation. And he tells Ishbosheth to his face, he's not afraid to tell this to his face, "I've had it with you. I'm not a dog. I'm not your dog. And I'm not going to take any more orders from you. You're only king because of my pleasure. And my pleasure now is to go to David's side." If Ishbosheth had any power, he would just say, "Seize him! I'm not going to let him go over to David's side." Right? So Avner threatens to make his way over to David, and he does. Okay? So this is very bad news for Yoav. Okay? I think I gave you the review of this last time. Yoav hates Avner for three good reasons. One, you killed my brother. That's enough. Right? He doesn't need any other reason, but he has to avenge the death of Asael. Right? Second reason he wants him dead is because if he makes peace with David, I'm going to lose my job. Right? I'm the head of David's army. Or at least I'm very close to it. I'm David's nephew. But if Avner comes to our side, that's too much to resist. He's going to take over the king, the army. Third reason that Yoav hates Avner is that from my lights, he's a traitor. It could be only one reason why Avner would appoint Ishbosheth king, for personal reasons. Everybody knows that David is the one who should be king. Okay. Right, so even the way Avner talks to Ishbosheth about going over to David's side, right? Look what he says in Pasuk Tes. Ko yaseh Elokim la'Avner v'cho yosif. That's a lashon of cho yosif lo. That's a lashon of shvuas. And it's only, this terminology is only mentioned in Sefer Shoftim, Shmuel, and Melachim, and once in Megillas Rus. It's just a lashon of shvua in four books of the Tanakh. Ki kasher nishpa Hashem leDavid, ki chene eselo. Wow, look how Avner is talking. And this just underscores, is it treachery? If you feel that God swore to David that he should have a kingdom, then why did you appoint Ishbosheth as king? You remember Tosfos' answer, Chevra? Remember the answer I gave last time from Tosfos? Tosfos in Sanhedrin says that when Yaakov told Binyamin, Umelochim mechalotzecha, I'm sorry, when Hashem told Yaakov, Umelochim mechalotzecha yetzeu, the last pasuk in the sixth aliyah in Parshas Vayishlach, Binyamin was not yet born. And God told him, kings shall yet emanate from you. So it has to be two kings, Shaul and another king from Shevet Binyamin. So Shaul had to make sure that oracle would be observed and would come true. If that's the case, you can believe that God swore to David that he would rule over Israel and yet do what you felt was in your power to make that other oracle come true. And Ishbosheth will rule a short time. In fact, I'm going to see to it that that rule is going to end now. Okay? So Avner goes over to David's side. Does anybody remember, I believe it was in 1970, that there was an Iranian? Not an Iranian, I think maybe an Iraqi. But there was a pilot from an Arab country that landed a plane in Israel to defect to Israel. And he wanted to become Jewish. He wanted to give Israel the secrets from his country, right? Now, obviously, that could be worth a tremendous first MiG ever seen by the West. Okay, good. Old Soviet plane, amazing. Okay, but you see that there is a great opportunity in such a thing, right? But then again, it's the same opportunity that David feels with Avner, right, in his camp. But then again, you have to vet the guy, right? You have to make sure he's not landing a plane so that he can find information about Israel to send back to the Soviet Union or wherever else sent him. You get it? You really got to vet this guy significantly. Right? Wouldn't you say? So how can David vet Avner to make sure he's on the up and up and he's not doing what Yoav is going to tell David? He just came in to see your coming and your going in order to have you assassinated so that his homeboy, Ishbosheth, can rule over all of Israel. So that's what Yoav tries to convince David Avner's intention is, right? How does David vet him? Yeah.
Passes him to assassinate someone.
Michal
is correct.
Deliver
Michal. If you can deliver Michal, look how brilliant this is. The best reason why David says this is probably because he may still love her. She's my wife. She was my first wife. She's my first love, right? If you ever see the 1951 film David and Bathsheba with Gregory Peck, she asks him that. Why did you send for me? Right? And he tells her, because I thought it would unite the kingdom and strengthen my grip on Binyamin. And then she starts crying. So, what can I say? Is that a good shot? It's not a bad shot, but like pshat is, it's not the only pshat. Okay. David may have many reasons for wanting So let's review the reasons why David might want to have Michal as the test. One, I love her; she's my wife, and she was taken from me by an evil act and given to another man. Chazal say that man never touched her; otherwise, David probably wouldn't take her back. But okay, but anyway,
it clearly seals his right to be king. That was the promise that Shaul gave her.
Whoever slays Goliath, remember? So, right. but and then it unifies the kingdom. But there's also a very important test for Avner in this scheme. When he says, "Deliver me my wife," why is this? It's such a clever. Again, if one reason alone is good enough, then it's fine. I don't need two other reasons. But like anything in life, there could be a number of motivations for any one thing. But wouldn't you agree that Ishbosheth does not want Michal, his sister, to go back to David? Would you agree?
Yeah.
It's bad news for Ishbosheth for her to do that.
Right.
And if Ishbosheth would have his way as king, he wouldn't let Michal go back, right?
Right.
So David's condition is actually quite brilliant. It's a test
to see what power does Avner wield over Ishbosheth. Right? It's such a clever plan, because by bringing me back Michal, even independent of the other two reasons we gave, it shows that Avner is serious and that he can deliver the goods.
And he can't go back anymore.
Right. And then he's not going to be able to go back. Thanks so much. Ishbosheth won't allow him to go back. He's finished.
Because he's a traitor already.
Oh boy, was that thirsty. Okay, so the condition of return is to bring back Michal. Okay. Vayishlach pasuk yudalad. Vayishlach David malachim el Ishbosheth ben Shaul lemor tno es ishti es Michal asher irasti li b'mea orlos plishtim. So, you know, he's why does he have to say this? He says, give me my... It's not that Avner does it. David sends a message that, you know, that Avner is going to make sure happens. And he says, give me back my wife that I betrothed with the 100 foreskins of the Plishtim. Actually, he gave 200, but Shaul told him 100. Right? So Vayishlach Ishbosheth Vayikocheha Me'im Ish Me'im Paltiel Ben Laish Vayelach Ita Isha Halochu V'cho Achreha Ad Bacharim V'emer Elav Avner Lech Shuv V'Hirshov. And he followed her and he was crying until a place called Bachurim. Really? There's a place in Israel called Bachurim? Never heard of it. Gemara says that Bachurim, do you get the pun? The two of them, Michal and Palti, behaved like two Bachurim. he never touched her. Chazal like him. They say Palti El, Palat Ba'el. What can I say? Because, you know, it says in the Torah that if a man marries a woman and then she goes to another man, she can never return to the original husband. So how is David taking back this? Because she never married the man in between. Okay? Okay, so Avner told him to return, and he returned. Udvar Avner haya im ziknei Yisrael emor gam tmol gam shalshom heyisem avakshim es David melech alechem. This pasuk is extremely instructive. This pasuk is very instructive. He tells the people to convince them that they should move away from supporting Ishbosheth to now support David. And he tells them by mentioning, you know, Tmol Shoshom means yesterday and the day before, meaning in times past, you all knew that David would one day be king over you. Really? If that was the case, why did David have such a hard time traveling anywhere in Malachim, in Shmuel Aleph? I mean, it became so intolerable for David. He had to send his whole family outside to Moab. I think we discussed that last time, remember? He had to go to the Eretz Plishtim twice. He knew that any place that he dared get help, he would put them in danger. Right? So he couldn't ask any help. The one place he asked for help, the Kohanic city, that caused them to be wiped out by Shaul. Right? Now, David did put another person in harm's way that way, Naval, a Carmeli, but that was all the way up in the north of Israel. And Shaul, by that time, was so overcome with the Plishtim, and he had no patience for wiping out cities that helped David by that time. But, you know, David gets very angry with Naval because Naval refused to help him. And David said he was ready to wipe out Naval if his wife, Abigail, had not stepped in. Right? Be it as it may, it's just the way of people. People are you know, they're sheeple. You know, they just follow. They've, you know, oh, he's supposed to say, okay, David's king, okay. right? But he says to them, you knew one day that David would be king. Well, today's that day. Okay. Also in chapter 5, after Ish-bosheth is assassinated, the people come to him. Look at Perakei Pasuk Aleph and Bet. It says the people go to Hebron and they tell David, Hinenu atzmecha uvesorcha anachnu. Gam es small, gam shil shom. Same terminology as our pasuk. Bioso shol melech. Even when Shaul was king, Atoha Yisra ha-motzi v'ha-mevi'es Yisrael. You were the one who acted like king in battle with us. So, you know, but, and still, David was handed in Keilah and Nazif, and then he had to hide here and hide there. And still, you think that the people would stand up for him. Okay. So, Pasuk Yudchet, Vata, Asuki Hashem Amar El David Lemor, Biyad David Avdi, Hoshia Esami Yisrael, Miyad Plishtim, Miyad Kol Evehem. So Avner says, you know what? I'm speaking for everybody. Everybody knows that you're the one who saved us from the Plishtim, and now we're all ready to serve you. Okay? Now, Avner has another job to do. He has to go back to the people of Binyamin to convince them to support David. You know, when Shaul was insanely jealous of David and Shmuel Aleph to chase him all around Israel, even when he badly needed troops to fight against the Plishtim, he would take thousands of troops to fight what David himself called one dead fly, a dead dog. What are you chasing after me for? I'm not threatening you. Twice David had to show in chapter 22 and 24 that I could have killed you. I cut off a corner of your garment. I have your spear and your canteen. I could have killed you. And both times I would not. So how many times do I have to tell you I'm not out to kill you? So then Shaul said, David, I confess I'm wrong. I know you're going to be the next king. Just promise me that you won't kill my children when you become king. And David made a mistake. What did David say? The king tells a commoner, promise me you won't kill my children and grandchildren when you become king. What mistake did David make in response to that?
He shouldn't have admitted till he become king.
Right. You say, how many times do I have to tell you? I don't intend to become king. What are you talking about? Instead, David says, okay, I promise. I won't. So then Shaul chased after him again. Shaul didn't keep that promise. Right, Shaul tells his men, I told you, see, he does intend to become king. Right, so Shaul was running after him again in the next story. Right? Okay, so Avner has to go to Shevet Binyamin to convince them that this is good for you. Because when Shaul thought that he had David trapped in a place called Keilah, and then Eviatar, who was the sole survivor from all those Kohanim, brought an ephod to David so David could inquire of God, like the Urim V'Tumim. So David asked God, what should I do about the saving the people of Keilah? Will they inform Shaul that I'm here? And Hashem told him, yes, even though you just saved them, you better escape because Shaul is going to conquer you. Shaul's going to make it here and they have a walled city and they're going to trap you. So David left and then Shaul was very upset. He said, who told David that I was going to entrap him here? And he starts screaming at all of his followers from Binyamin. And he says, listen, all of you Benjaminites. If David becomes king, is he going to give you vineyards? Is he going to give you gifts like I give you? Is he going to give you kickbacks? Is he going to take care of you the way I take care of Shevet Binyamin? So which of you are going to open up my ears to let me know where I can find my enemy? In other words, he's making the point that, you know, you always want your own to be in power. Right? So here is where Avner has to convince the people of Binyamin that it's in your best interests to serve David. No more with this Ishbosheth stuff. We've had our two kings. It was a nice run. Now let's give it up to David. That is what Avner is doing here at the in Pasuk Yutes. And David is about to return the favor by moving his kingdom from Hebron to Yerushalayim. Okay. So Pasuk Chaf says, Vayavo Avner el David Hebron v'ito esrim anoshim v'yaz David la'avner el anoshim asher ito mishte. And Avner came with 20 men to show that he can commands some respect and an entourage. And David made a feast for them. Okay, so David at the feast tells David, Avner at the feast tells David that I forge a pact with you and I will deliver all the tribes to you. Okay, now at this feast, there's obviously one important person didn't attend. His name is Yoav. Okay. Mm-hmm. The next pasuk explains that why Yoav wasn't there. It says, "V'hinei avdei David v'Yoav b'me hagdud v'shalol rav imam." It just came from a battle, and there was a lot of spoils, so they must be happy. David's about to get a nice kickback, right? Hey, v'u, they brought it with them. V'avner einenu im David b'chevron kishuchu v'yelach b'shalom. Avner had already left. There was no confrontation between Avner and Yoav.
Now,
because had there been a confrontation, had David been with Yoav and Avner together, then who knows, that might have been fireworks. Right? Yoav would have probably, knowing Yoav, who's a loose cannon, would have right in front of Avner have said something like, how can you do this? How can you, you know, this protocol in private? But you know, you can't scream at a king like that in public. Right? But Yoav might have lost control and rebuked David right there in front of Avner about why you were letting this man into your inner circle. In which case David probably would have answered, that decision is mine, not yours. You stand down. Right? This is my new chief of staff. Had Yoav killed Avner after that, David would have killed Yoav. You can't do that after I publicly told you that I want Avner to be my general. Right? But as it stands, Avner and Yoav never met in front of David. Avner had left before Yoav made it there. Okay. So, v'yoav v'chol atzava asher ito ba'u v'yagidu li'yoav le'mor. V'yagidu. Some people told Yoav. It doesn't say David told him. Just says Vayagidu, it's a Lashon Katsar, just says they told Yoav. And what did they tell him? Ba Avner ben Ner el Hamelech, Vayeshachehu Vayelech B'Shalom. Wow, someone landed a MiG in Israel. The Avner himself was here and David didn't kill him? Is that crazy? Vayavo Yoav el Hamelech. Vayomer, Meosisa, Hine bo Avner elecha, Lama ze shlachto b'yelech aloch. You had the enemy who prevented you from being the unequivocal king of all of Israel and you let him go? You didn't put him in chains so that we could maybe bargain for him and make a ransom or use him as some kind of bargaining chip someday in the future or torture him to give us some information? How did you let him go? Yodates Avner ben Ner ki lefatot chaba v'ladas es mutzacha ves mova'echa v'ladas es kol asher ata oseh. He came to see your comings and your goings in your palace and he's going to come back with a knife and stab you and kill you. I made up that last one. V'yetze Yoav me'im David v'yishlach malochim acharei Avner v'yashivu oso mibor hasira v'david lo yada. Yoav sent a message to Avner saying, in the name of David, that we want you back here in Hebron. Okay, I'm coming back. He brought him back. Okay. Now, do you see where it says that they brought him back Mibor Hasira? If you were writing a medrash on this, what would be your basic question about this? And they brought back Avner from Bor Hasira to go back to Hebron. What's the medrashic question to ask about this?
Why was he coming back? Why would he come back?
No, what is Bor Hasira?
That's a more global question. He's coming back because he's ready to listen to whatever David tells him to do. But the Midrash's question is, there's no place in Israel called Bor Hasira. What is that? Bor Hasira, the pit of Sira? Right? And the more fundamental question, as I think Chava is hinting at, is why should the reader of the text care where Avner was when David called for him to come back? Or when he thought David called for him to come back. It was Yoav who called for him. Yoav probably sent this letter in the name of David. Right? Because if he just calls for Avner himself, of course Avner's not going to come. Avner doesn't answer to Yoav. Right? So Yoav is really acting treacherously here, right? He's speaking in the name of the king. Well, this is just the beginning of his treachery, as you're about to read. Okay, we all know what's about to happen. Question I'd like to ask on Avner before we get back to Bor Hasira that Chava just mentioned. The question I'd like to ask of Avner is, Avner, you are a trained general.
Sure.
Probably a trained killer also, right? So if you recognize that Yoav wants you out of the picture, you are a significant threat to Yoav. Yoav is a natural enemy of yours, besides all the political reasons you killed his brother. What on earth could possibly make Avner lose his sense of proportion and seclude himself with Yoav? So maybe Avner would say, I'm much stronger than Yoav. Yoav could never kill me. Well, we'd be wrong. But you know what I'm saying? If you know someone has good, strong motive to want to kill you, usually you stay away from that person in seclusion. Wouldn't you think so?
People make mistakes.
People make mistakes? Mm. Yeah, but remember, these are trained political hacks here, and they know what you know. The chief of an army, they're very good at these kind of intrigue. This kind of political swapping, and they, all right. Anyway, I have a potential answer. Is that Avner is so sure that Yoav has orders from David, leave him alone, right? Avner's mistake is that he underestimates just how crazy Yoav is, right? When I say crazy, meaning he is just, when he wants to, when someone crosses Yoav, he plots his revenge, and it's sometimes the dish served cold. He really wants to avenge his brother's death, but he also has self-interest. This man is going to replace me in the army, right? So I think that Avner was just so sure that Yoav would not compromise David's position after I very famously and publicly agreed to make peace with him, and then he sends me home to have me killed by his nephew? Nah, there's no way Yoav would do such a thing. Right? But Avner's biggest mistake is underestimating what Yoav is capable of. Okay. But what is the Bor Hasira? You ever hear of the famous, it's a famous drash in the Gemara. Bor Hasira. Took him from Bor Hasira, from the pit of Sira, the Gemara understands means a thorn. Pit of the thorn. So I share it with you now. What I'm about to tell you is drash. It's holy drash. I mean, it's very midrashic. But here's what it is. When David showed Avner a piece of a shawl, a piece of his corner of his garment that he cut off in order to show him that I could have killed you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, according to the Gemara, Avner told Shaul, he's lying. A corner of your garment got stuck on a thorn bush, and the thorn bush ripped it off, and then David found it, and he's trying to use that to convince you he could have killed you. Second time, when David took his spear and his canteen, Avner, Shaul said, how did he get my spear and canteen? He must be telling the truth. And Avner said, no. It must have fallen from your hand into a pit. And he found it in a pit. And now he's showing it to you as if though he took it from you to prove to you erroneously that he could have killed you and he chose not to. In other words, it was Avner who convinced Shaul in these two stories, even after David incontrovertibly proved to him that I could have killed you when I chose not to, so leave me alone, I don't want your life, that Avner prevented Shaul from making that recognition. Everybody see? So Mibor Hasira means, Bor and Hasira are the two elements of which, ready, get it? Of which Avner deserves punishment. It's a midrash, but it's out there. Okay? So Yoav calls back Avner from Bor Hasira, and Avner dutifully turns around and makes his way back. Okay? Vayashav Avner, Pasukov Zion, it's a chevron, Vayateu Yoav el Tocha Sha'ar ledaberi toba Shelly. Shelly means in seclusion. He called over Avner to speak to him in a secluded area. Vayakehu sham hachomesh, vayomas bedamasa elochiv. So Yoav killed Avner in the fifth rib, which kills immediately. And the pasuk explains to avenge the blood of Asael. Right, he did that to avenge Asael's blood, which is to express the fact that that's his main motivation. It doesn't mean that he can't have other motivations, right? But this is his main motivation. Okay. Now, when David heard this, Vayishma David me'acharei kein, so David must protest, and he doth protest, and he must protest a lot. Okay, because if in chapter 1 it might have looked to the average Israelite that David was behind the death of Shaul because he had been fighting with the Plishtim for some time, right? How did the Plishtim know where Shaul was hiding? Was it David that guided them? Of course it wasn't, but, you know, people love to talk, right? So David had to, back in chapter 1, convince everybody how sad he is that Shaul is dead, even though that paves the way for him being king, at least of Yehuda. Right? And now, right after Avner risks his exalted position with the northern, you know, with the 11 tribes, with Binyamin, after he risks his exalted position with Binyamin in order to join David's forces, and the next day David sends his own nephew, his chief of staff, to kill Avner, it looked like treachery, not just of Avner, but of David. And David says, Noki Anochi, I'm clean, Mamlachti, and my kingdom, See, you know what? We're learning something important here. In the ancient world, if a king wanted to knock off somebody, no one could judge him about that. He knocked off whoever you wanted. You didn't have to answer to anybody. You killed whoever you wanted. The lives of your subjects are yours. Their property is yours. Their lives are yours. See, the story of David and Bathsheba has some unsavory elements to it. But the fact is that at the end of the story, when the prophet points his finger and says, "You are the man in my parable," in any other ancient society, that prophet gets killed. For daring to question, for daring to rebuke the actions of the king. This is how Israel is different. Okay, the fact that David owns up to the need to convince everybody that I did not kill Avner. In fact, look at the very last pasuk in the parak. Right? You get it? Everybody could see that it wasn't David who ordered this hit. So why didn't David have Yoav killed for this? He killed the Nara Maliki for even suggesting that he killed Shaul. Why didn't he kill Yoav?
Yoav has something. His relationship with David was very not like a subject to a king. He had something on. It was family, but later on, when he killed his son, he had the son killed against his orders. He took freedom.
Right, Yoav is the one who delivers the letter. Yoav is the one who gets the letter. Uriah delivers it.
Right, he has something.
David also he trusts Yoav. He knows as a loose cannon as he is, he's good to have on my team. He's a loose cannon, but he's good to have on my team. But here, rather than kill Yoav because Yoav is his nephew, I'm sure that David's sister had something to say about this. Rather than kill Yoav, David curses him with six curses.
He lets his son do the dirty job.
Yeah, that's in this week's Parv Torah. No, that's in Vayechi. Parv Torah Vayechi, where he tells Shlomo to get rid of Yoav and Shimi ben Gera, right? So this is what he cries out bitterly and sings a dirge about the loss of Avner. It was a loss for David. Avner really had an opportunity to really unite the kingdom. So this death of Avner right here explains an anomaly. How many years did Ishbosheth rule?
Two.
And yet it took 7 years for David to rule over all of Israel. David did not bring his kingdom from Hebron to Yerushalayim until after 7 years. So one might imagine that had Avner lived, the kingdom would have been united earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Sure.
So David, instead of killing Yoav, curses him in six ways. Okay? So this is what he tells him. Okay? He says, "Al yikares mi beis Yoav, Zav, 1, Mitzora, 2, Machzik bapelech, 3, Nofel bacherev, 4, Chasar lechem, 5. Now, Zav is just a general, the Gemara says it's a general punishment for sickness, right? You should be sick. You should be leprous. You should be crippled. You should fall by the sword. And you should be lacking in bread.
He kills him. He curses him or the family.
He curses Yoav. He says, "Lo yikares mi beis Yoav." So his household.
Household.
Now this is the famous boomerang of a curse. Halavai, we should bless and let the blessing come back to us. But of David's descendants who sat on the throne, Rechavam was a Zav. That's how the Gemara says it. He was sick. Uziyahu was a Metzora. Asa was Machzik Bapelech. He had gout, or very bad feet problems. Nofel Becherev would be Yoshiyahu. And Chasar Lechem would be Yehoyachin, who had to eat like a pauper at the table of the Babylonian king for 37 years. Right? You see the boomerang of this curse. Oh my goodness, I don't know where the time went. But that's how David ends Perek Gimel with this dirge over Avner in order to convince everybody that I did not order this hit. Okay, so this is now part two. This is the second person in Shevet Binyamin whose death paves the way more for David to be king. Right? The first chapter was Shaul and his three sons. Chapter three is Avner. Tune in for next week for chapter four, where the final Binyamin personality is going to be knocked off, if you will. And then David in chapter five becomes the king of all of Israel. Okay. All right. More political intrigue next week. And we're going to see some interesting parshanut, some interesting midrashim about the what happened to Ishbosheth. Okay. Right. Have a good night, everybody.
Night, Rabbi. Night.
Good night, everyone.
If Avner had lived, he might not have had his trouble with his sons, because he would have been such a strong figure they probably wouldn't have thought of revolting against him.
It's very possible. It's the question of if Avner had lived can sometimes be as intriguing or as tantalizing as saying if Abraham Lincoln had lived.
Right. Sorry. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
If Avner had lived, the kingdom of David would have been very different. So you have to see how what an effect that that Yoav had.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Have a good week.
Thank you, everybody, for coming on board.